Nerds.
Today's episode is sponsored by Smart Travel, a new podcast from NerdWallet. Want to travel like a savvy jet setter? No, that doesn't mean monogramming your passport. It means making smart decisions every step of your trip, which means knowing your options. Smart Travel unpacks the facts, like which booking sites actually save money, how to fly first class using points, and if that fancy travel card is a smart investment, all so you can save more on your next adventure. Follow Smart Travel from NerdWallet today and start traveling like a pro. What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
I'm Liam Maitland, KCBS foodie chef in Mexico City. Chef Eduardo Garcia Massimo. One of the highlights of my trip, a dinner here. And Massimo will get into it in just a couple of minutes. But first, chef who put a stake in the ground here with his own restaurant, 2011. Here we are, 13 years later, beyond a pandemic, still strong, still thriving, still here, and I'm honored to spend some time. Chef Eduardo, how are you?
I'm very good. Thank you so much for having me. Happy, still. Almost 50 and going.
I'm in the 50 club. It gets better. Yeah, it gets better. You creak a little, but it feels better. It does.
Yeah.
Chef, let's go way back in time and go back to where it all started. Growing up as an immigrant family in America, your family settled for a period, an important part of your life as a teenager in Atlanta. Being part of an immigrant family in America, who was cooking in the family? What was coming out of the kitchen and landing on your kitchen table as a kid?
So basically, we're not only immigrants, but we come from a village in Mexico. And if you come from a village in Mexico, you come from very, very good eating. So in my village, obviously, my mom, my grandmother always had the say-so in the kitchen. You men didn't go in the kitchen. But I always, you know, had everything here on site.
You were watching.
I was smelling, I was watching, and I was thinking. In the U.S., it was a little bit difficult because we moved in at a time where...
Wait, where was that village in Mexico that you found?
So my village in Mexico is in Guanajuato. I was born in the state of Guanajuato. And actually, we're in Mexico City now, but I'd never been here before until I was deported in 2007.
Wow.
So basically, it was a big change for us going from... Basically, it was a 200-year change. It was going literally into the future for us.
Yeah.
Because we go from a village who had just... got electricity.
Sure.
And we didn't get running water while I was living in my village. We got it in 1998. Everything we went and got from wells that we built ourselves.
And you were probably living off the grid, right? Simply with just...
No television, none of that. I had never seen a plane. I had seen a plane in the far, you know, sky and heard a plane, but I had never ever seen... anything like that. So we go into the future, literally, but a little bit into the past when it came down to food, because in the 80s, Mexican food in the U.S., yet so close, but so far, it wasn't really there.
Yeah.
So for us, it was a huge change. But luckily, my father had been in the States for about 20 years when we got there, and he knew how to make the perfect, perfect flour tortillas, because that's what Mexicans were eating in the north of Mexico and in the U.S.
Yeah.
So I remember this noise. I would never, ever, ever forget this noise, where my father would wake up at 4 in the morning every day and make flour tortillas, and you just hear the stick, you know, the little broomstick that he cut from a broom and made into a dough.
A rolling pin.
Like a rolling pin, yeah. So then my mom would get up at 5 and she would cook very basic eggs with frijoles and make burritos, and we would take that to the fields and eat. But everything was about the smell, everything was about the sounds, and little by little Mexicans started to bring more product and more product, and it started to become a little more Mexican for me.
Yeah. Because what was the food when you were in America? Let's talk about Atlanta, because you spent your teenage years there. What did you think of American food? And what's your earliest memory of enjoying hamburger or something so American and alien to you?
I'll tell you a super fun story. But first, when we lived in Florida, we worked every day as kids. But one day, like on Saturdays, before we would go to the fields, my father would go to this guy's house who made barbacoa, northern style.
Yeah.
Like birria, but...
So it's in the ground?
Yes, in the ground, but he made it in the back of his house, like a hush-hush. But his name, I remember the taqueria in his house was called Juan Tacos. And so basically, Saturdays was amazing because we ate birria tacos with flour tortillas.
Yeah.
Because the tortillas that they sold back then, it had an odd smell to them.
Yeah.
And we didn't really like those. So basically, I never went to school in the U.S. because even if we did go to school, they didn't teach us anything because we were migrant kids.
Yeah.
And migrant kids basically move so much that teachers don't really know what to do with them.
Yeah.
And so, but in the South Georgia, mm-hmm. where I loved going to school, not because of the hot teachers or the blonde little teenage girls, but because of the food they served in the cafeteria.
Really?
Yes.
What was it? What did you love?
Fried chicken, fried okra. What else was amazing?
Mac and cheese.
Mac and cheese, pizza on Fridays, grits, French toast. But it was like a restaurant because on the center of the table, they had the wax peppers and they had hot sauce and you can go for seconds. Like if we didn't fill up, like you can literally go back in line and get more fried chicken, tater tots and mac and cheese. And it was amazing. Like we Mexicans kids, the school knew that we ate so much. They probably never figured out why. They probably thought we were just like poor kids who had no food at home.
Yeah.
And that's because we were overworked, because that's what we did. After school, we went to work and we got home late. And the next day we would wake up and we just ate the cafeteria food, you know, because it was so good.
Second, I'm still stuck on seconds. The fact that you can go for seconds.
I
remember that too, because at home, you got what was there. It wasn't a case of... what's for dinner? It's like, is there going to be dinner? So going to school meant you would definitely get a meal and seconds.
Yeah. Yeah, so as a kid, really, like, food to me was like... it wasn't as big as it's now. I knew that I love food because I come from a family where eating was part of life.
Sure.
Like, we knew two things.
Yeah.
We knew work, and we knew food.
Yeah.
Like, those were two things that were in every day, like, as a kid. Not as an adult, as a kid. So going to the States, we lived around food because we grew food.
Yeah.
Maybe it wasn't, like, the most nutritional food because we lived around, like, big farms with pesticides and agrochemicals and things. As a kid, you don't know that, right?
Yeah.
But we grew around food. We grew up around food.
So if you had one memory of America and the food that you enjoyed as a kid and could just take one thing and eat it as part of your Last Supper, what would that one American item be? What would it be?
Oof, that's a difficult one, but it would really, really have to be fried chicken, especially from the South.
Yeah.
Like, it's just... Like, if you take... Just... By the way, I love chicken. Like, it took me 10 years to actually get the right chicken in Maximo, because chicken over the you know, past 50 years have been really, like, messed up.
Oh, of course.
You know? Yeah. All these chemicals they put in. So it took me 10 years to get a natural, delicious chicken in Maximo. So you take a such humble ingredient and add a few spices and flour and fry it, and you just have, like, this amazing... isn't that what most death row inmates want?
They want fried chicken. So we're going to fast forward, because the chicken story is taking us to where we are today. And just a few nights ago, I came here to Maximo, had the most extraordinary meal. Thank you, chef.
Thank you.
Spoiled, royally spoiled. I never imagined, if I saw chicken wing on a menu, that I would get excited. But I knew you were going to do something special with it. And what you have done and what you do, it's not just the thoughtful use of ingredients, it's how you source the ingredients and knowing where they came from, knowing you're purchasing from good purveyors who are also thoughtful and conscious, you know, of the planet and the environment. This chicken wing, I'm still dreaming about it 5 days later. And that's what you do. You elevate good ingredients. So something ordinary, you make it extraordinary. That's what you did with this dish. So we're going to go straight to it. The chicken wing in a dipping sauce, with a dipping sauce. Talk us through that dish.
So a chicken wing is probably one of the best pieces of cut from the chicken. It's bony, it's got very little meat, but it's delicious. Especially like when you fry it, no? So basically, when we are breaking down chicken, you have all these other parts that aren't breast, but you can use. They're still delicious. They still have the same nutritional facts as the rest of the bird. So basically what we do is we debone the chicken wing. We stuff it with more chicken and also...
You stuff the chicken wing.
We stuff the chicken wing with more meat because it lacks meat.
Yeah.
And then we have another dish on the menu that we use beef tongue that, you know, we braise. And then when we break down the actual, the whole tongue, we have little pieces of meat that are, you know, left over. We chop that up and we put that into the minced meat, and then we stuff the chicken wing. And then we just basically grill it.
Yeah.
Grill it and use some of that reduction from the bones, and then just baste it and brush it with more love and just basically put it on a plate. With the rest of the bones, we make a broth and serve that on the side so that you can, you know, enjoy the flavors, because we try to use everything. Yeah. You know, we use everything. A lot of times if we go to the restaurant and they're basically giving you like this broth on the side, most people would think, well, maybe they're giving you the leftovers for that. Well, that's not leftover. That's, you know, that's love.
That is love.
On a bowl.
That is love, pure love. And chef, you know, a lot of chefs talk about, you know, the whole beast from nose to tail. But for you, equally important is the whole vegetable, you know, from root to flower. It's important to use it all. Use the entire ingredients. That's part of a sustainable view.
Yeah. Well, so when you grow up in a poor environment, money-wise, but a super rich, you know, food environment, you learn to use everything. Because if you talk about a beet, you know, you take the root and you take the actual beet and then the leaves.
Yeah.
Every one of those has nutritional value and different flavors.
Yeah.
So if you take the roots and you flavor a broth with it, or you make a puree and for the actual beet, and then you take the leaves and you braise the leaves and serve them with fish, with meat, with lamb, whatever. It just, and you know what else? It's actually a challenge for the cooks. It's a challenge.
Which is good, because you want them to be challenged.
You want them to be challenged, and you want them to be happy. Because also, one of the things that I know, and most chefs know, is that even if a cook has already graduated from school or worked at a restaurant, when he is going to work for you, he is still learning.
Yeah.
And if you give him those challenges, he's going to learn more.
Yeah.
And it has nothing to do with hands challenge or a brain challenge. It's more of a palate challenge.
Yeah.
Once they learn how to work with their palates, the rest comes naturally.
Yeah.
That's the hardest part about a cook.
Sure. Let's go back to 2011. You put the keys in the door. Day one, Massimo here. What are you hoping for? And if you could whisper in your ear, now, looking back, what would you tell yourself about what's to come? So part one, key in the door.
So part one, key in the door. It wasn't easy. Nothing has ever been easy for me. Nothing. But I think that's the resilience in me. I think that's part of the reason why we are talking at this moment. Because nothing has ever been easy.
Yeah.
Ever. Since day one, since I was born to this moment, you still challenge. So the day we opened the door, it was a dream come true because you are a villager. Mm-hmm. You're not supposed to think, or society tells you that you're not supposed to think big or dream big. Society tells you that you have to be that same villager.
Yep.
So you think as a villager.
In your box.
So the day we opened the restaurant, we were dreaming. We were happy, but worried. Because this is 12 years ago.
Yeah.
Mexico was not the same country 12 years ago. You still had to bring in people. You still had to tell people that this was a restaurant where you could eat amazing.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and people in Mexico they're not full.
It wasn't part of the culture.
It was
a dozen years ago.
It was not part of the culture. You go to a restaurant, to a classical restaurant, it's been there for 50 years, and people believed in that restaurant because it's been there for 50 years.
Set menu. Rarely changing.
A 50-year restaurant with a 50-year menu.
Yeah.
But people went there because they had been there for 50 years.
Yeah.
And so we opened the door. A few weeks went by. It wasn't easy. We, you know, scratching our heads, like, is it going to happen, you know? And I tell you a story that I tell everybody because it's a real story and because from this moment on, it literally changed. It's a lot. I believe a lot in energy,
yeah.
In positive and negative energy,
yeah.
Because they both exist,
yeah.
in my view and in my life. It was December the 19th, 2011.
Yeah.
7 p.m. The earth started to shake like nothing I had ever witnessed in my life. I literally thought the world was ending. I had never seen anything like it. The road, we came out of the building where Maximo used to be, and the road was literally like waving like this. It was waves. And I was like, this is not real. Everything should be falling down. And in that moment, I was like, wait, what if the building does fall down and I don't have to pay rent? Because we had been there 2 weeks and we had no money for rent. And I was like, I had forgotten about the earthquake and I had started to pray that the building would fall down so I didn't have to pay rent.
Wow.
And this was a Saturday night. Obviously, we did two tables that day.
Yeah.
So we always, that Sunday, we came back and we had another two people for brunch. And then Monday we closed because it was, you know, like our day of off. And Tuesday came, we opened the door, the restaurant was full, lunch and dinner. And then from that day on, this is the moment.
Wow.
10 projects later with other of our investors, which is an uncle of mine and a cousin of mine in the U.S., own Maximo together, but all the other projects are with employees.
Yeah. Wow. So we talk about sustainability. By the way, what a story. 2 weeks in. 2 weeks in. Only a handful of diners and this happens. But then, joy of joys. Mm-hmm. So your life, you know, the ups and downs.
Yeah. Well, I got tired. I got old. I lost hair. But
you look good. You look good. You're not even 50 yet. Almost.
Thank you. No, it's a challenge. But you know what? It's rewarding. I've met so many people. I've been to 50 countries I never even dreamed of. You know, people thank you for what you're doing. We have employees from the first day still here. And some of our employees are already restaurant owners with us. So it's a reward. It's hard, but it's a reward.
And we talk about sustainability, Chef. Sustainability also, it's not just about the food. It is about your employees, giving them a piece of the pie. Your investment in them begets an investment in you. And to give back, I mean, that's that full circle sustainable moment.
I always tell my employees, me and my wife have the title for the restaurant. But this belongs to all of us. Like we all get a paycheck at the end of the day, and we all own part of the business. It's our restaurant. It's not my restaurant. I never tell people that this is all mine. This is ours. And so basically what we've done, we go back to 2011. When we started the Little Maximo, me and my wife wanted a little bit of restaurant where the neighbors came and we would be happy. That was the dream.
Yeah.
But you know what we learned? Is we learned that people in Mexico needed jobs.
Yeah.
And then we started to hire people. And then we're like, we don't need any more people. Yeah, but we can hire them and they can, you know, feed their family. And then we learned that. We learned that if we employ people, now we have close to 400 or 500, I don't know how many people we have working for us in 10 restaurants. And that was the dream then. That this is why for me is super important. Like we keep our restaurants running more than obviously the accolades, the stars, the 50 best and all of this is important. But for us, it's a lot more important to keep the restaurants running so that the people that are working in the restaurants are allowed to feed their families and all the people that work for us, because it's not just employees, it's the people that we buy things from.
Sure.
And the people that they buy things from. That's the whole deal with us. Like, it's amazing to have a recognition.
I want to mention a couple of important markers in your journey. COVID, a pandemic, it brought a lot of people down, brought the whole industry down, not just in America, around the world, because everyone was touched by this. What did you take away from it? How did you come out of it? And as you look back at it, what was the greatest lesson from it?
You know, like I told you that I believe in energy. COVID was 2020.
Yeah.
It had been 5 years before that since I told my wife. I had this feeling. You know, I had this feeling. I kept telling my wife, like, something is going to happen. Something is going to happen. And the day that it happened, for me, it was like, wow, what do we do now?
Yeah.
But it wasn't a shocker.
Yeah.
We learned so much from that time. We learned that this could be open today and it could close tomorrow. But we also learn that if we do things right, eventually we are going to not necessarily like thrive, but we will survive.
Sure.
You know? So for us, it was a little bit more challenging, but at the same time, I think we are the restaurants. We even got an award because of it. We are probably like the restaurant that made it possible for other restaurants to take that lesson and keep on going. Because what happened is the day that the city closed,
March 2020, right?
Yes. March 19th, 2020, the city told us that we could no longer open.
I remember this because it was 2 days after St. Patrick's Day when everyone drinks.
Yeah.
And we drank heavily. Go on, sorry.
But
yeah,
for us, it was another challenge.
Yeah.
We had invested in this restaurant where we are sitting right now. It wasn't cheap. And it was our first day of opening. Our first day of opening, they told us we couldn't open.
And you respond?
No big deal. You know why? Because sometimes, and it's going to happen again, because we are doing everything so fast.
Yeah.
You know, everything is so fast and it's going to happen. For us, we looked at it as like, calm down.
Mm-hmm.
You're going too fast. Relax. You know, and we did that.
Yeah.
We did that. But we sat down, we told our employees, look, 20% are going to stay in the restaurant. The rest go to your villages.
Yeah.
See your family and be with them.
Yeah.
Because we might never, ever see each other again.
How many came back?
All of them. We never fired anybody.
Yeah.
We almost went bankrupt. We had, at one point, we went from a company that was doing so much to 20,000 pesos, the equivalent of maybe $1,500 in the bank. With 120 employees. So this is what we did. I had seen, because in the U.S., the COVID came 2 weeks before.
Yeah.
In New York, it was already like chaos. Yeah. San Francisco was already chaos. Yeah. And I had seen these chefs, they would like start to do to-go food. So that same day we closed, that same day, I told my employees, the ones that stay, grab everything we have to go, all the to-go boxes,
See
how much we have, and I'm going to start to post. And that day we sold 70 kits.
Oh my gosh. Wow.
Or to-go food. And we had two of the days with the most sales in the entire time we've been open.
Crazy. So a challenge comes, you meet it head on, and you breathe, and you take action.
No, you know what? We became human again, at least for 2 years.
Yeah.
We became human again.
Yeah.
Because every day I would wake up at 6 in the morning, come home at 12, go to sleep for 3 hours, then wake up again at 6. Every day. And for what? For what? So this was like meant that now it's like I don't have to go to work at 6. I go at 9 and I come back at 5. And then me and my wife, we cook pasta and we have a little bit of wine. That was human. For us, that was human. So it was like probably, like obviously you saw the news, how some places where people were dying and, you know, it was sad. But at the same time, you look at your little bubble and you're like, wow, this is life. This is life. We feel human again.
And in this industry, because you work so hard, I know when you were opened, it wasn't 6 a.m., you were up at 4 a.m., and you were going to meet with your purveyors and getting everything set up. Those things that your father taught you, you know, knowing that he would get up at the same time when you were a kid, I'm sure informed you. What would you say to your parents? I'm sure you already have. Are your parents still here? I hope they are.
My mom.
Your mom's still here.
My father died in 2005, and one of the reasons is why I'm so resilient is because of him.
Yeah.
You know, and I've always, like, I never told him, and he obviously knew, but I've always wanted to be like him.
Yeah.
Because he was that type of person. Like, there were some times where remember Hurricane Andrew in the 90s?
Sure,
and it took all the fields.
Yeah.
And we were left out with a job. And he's like, we never saw worry in him because he knew that we were going to eat.
Yeah.
Maybe we weren't going, you know, to have that same meal, but we were going to eat. And for him, it was never like a end of the world kind of thing. It was like, okay, so we'll go to a church, we'll cut their grass, and they'll give us a bag of rice or a bag of beans, you know? And that I learned that from him, and he knew that I was watching. He knew that, because it was like the kid that he always told, you know, like, hurry, hurry. But he knew that I knew that I needed to hurry.
Sure. Yeah.
You know? So, and my mom is like, both of my parents were illiterate. And obviously, they never went to school or anything. And she is like me. She doesn't know, but she knows.
Yeah.
You know, like, she knows that if she put her mind into it or put, you know, like, hands on, she would achieve it.
Yeah.
You know? And my mom is like so grateful for, you know, for what we've done, because once you have a loved one that goes away, especially one that you lived, you know, most of your life with, then you think everything is done for. Like,
but your father still informs you today, motivates you today, inspires you today. He's still here.
He's still, obviously, my father's still here. He's always going to be here every day. Even when I see myself, I start to see, you know, more of him in me.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like, because you start to look alike.
Sure.
You know, so...
Yeah. You are him, you're of him, you're becoming him.
Yeah, exactly.
Chef Eduardo, last couple of questions. For those who've never come here, I know you have 10 different operations all over, but just because I've had this experience, I'm going to be telling everyone to come. They already are. Tough reservation, but you can get one. Describe the scene here at Massimo, and what will people discover when they get here? What's on the menu? What's the vibe? What's the experience of Massimo here in Mexico City?
Massimo is a very live place. It reminds you, I tell you why the design is like this. When I lived in Ohio, we picked cucumbers for pickling and tomato romas for canning. Mm. And our neighbors were all Amish. Mm. And we lived inside a barn.
No.
And it looked like this, but wood. And when I told this to my designer, he built our little home that we used to live inside a barn.
Wow.
And so this is a very live place. You don't...
This is very personal, obviously.
This is very personal. It feels like a home. And when people come here, the one thing that I can tell you is don't come with big, like, star expectations or 50 best expectations. Come here with a mental mind that you are going to have something nutritional and delicious. And if I tell you about the menu, I won't, because people will be upset if they don't find it, because we change the menu almost every day, depending only on what we are, you know, harvesting, or if there's no fish, there's no fish because the fishermen didn't catch any fish, or if there's no chicken, it's because the chickens aren't, you know, ready. And so we just, it's nutritional, delicious, simple food.
I can attest to that. Simple food, elevated. When I walked in the doors here for the first time this past week, I did feel like I was coming into someone's home. If you're waiting for a table, there's a living room where you can sit.
Yeah.
And it feels like we're hanging out in your house. So it's comfortable. But the service, the quality of the food takes it to that next level. But it's a comfortable experience. It's not a fussy experience. It is casual. Last two questions are important for anyone coming to Mexico City. If you have family, they're coming from America or another part of the world, what's a perfect day in Mexico City? Where do you send them? What do you do with them? So, and this is with their tourist hat on.
So a perfect day in Mexico City, weather-wise for me, is a rainy day. That's probably why I'm living in Mexico City, because I love the rain. And when it rains, it's amazing. Mexico City is a city that's huge, but at the same time, it's super small. Because you're really only within a 5-kilometer radius.
Yeah.
Everything else is where, you know, it's where people live. It's amazing, but it's living quarters. You don't go there. So you stay in Roma, you stay in Condesa, you stay in Centro, you stay in Coyoacán. So when you come to Mexico City, think of it as a place where you've been before, especially if you come from the States, because it's so close and so far.
And also Europe. It feels like Paris in places.
Yeah.
It does.
Yeah. It feels like a lot of places in the world. But when you come to Mexico City, have that mentality that you've been here before. People are super kind. Don't be afraid to ask anybody for anything, because they will answer. And they will answer with a calm, a happy answer. There's so much to eat. There's so much that you can do with museums, galleries, restaurants. It's a city that lives on happiness.
And you can walk. It's walkable.
Everywhere. You can walk. It's like any other big city in the entire world, where people, where it's not 100% safe, because that's just the way big cities are.
Yeah.
I feel very safe.
I've always been. Never had a bad moment in a week.
Me either. I've been here since 2009. It's never been no incident. But it's like any other big city in the world. You want to do, get into the little bad things, and bad things will happen, no? Come here and enjoy. Leave the people, leave the food, and leave the art and architecture.
Chef Eduardo Garcia, what an honor. Give me your hand. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
Friends, do yourself a favor, more on Chef Eduardo Garcia's story, and a link, of course, to Maximo's. You can come dine here. You'll leave with a happy heart and a happy tummy, I know that. More on Chef's Story at kcbsradio.com and click on Foodie Champ.
This season, a new hot deal has arrived at Metro. $25 a line for 4 lines with all the data you need and 4 free Samsung Galaxy A15 5G phones. Getting Metro's best deals is easy. No ID required, no activation fees. Get a new number or keep your own. It's up to you. That's 4 lines for $25 a line plus 4 free phones. Visit a store or go online today. Only at Metro by T-Mobile.
When you join Metro Plus tax, for a limited time and subject to change. Max one offer per account.
Today's podcast is sponsored by Midi Health. At any given time, 61% of adult women say they want to lose weight. But for many, that's easier said than done. If you've had trouble losing weight, don't lose hope. Midi Health uses a deep understanding of women's hormones and a combination of weight loss medications to create a customized plan for each user. Midi Health can help you achieve more effective and sustainable weight loss by addressing hormone imbalances. Midi can also prescribe proven weight loss medications that help you experience reduced appetite and increased feelings of fullness. When paired with hormone optimization, you're not just managing your weight, you're also supporting your body's natural processes, which means you can overcome those weight loss plateaus that in the past have been so difficult to move beyond. So if you're ready to combine the power of hormones with the power of weight loss medications, visit joinmidi.com today. Discover how this innovative approach can lead you to lasting success. That's joinmidi.com.
Baseball's all about the games, and the best in daily gaming is on the MLB app, where every day starts with new puzzles and challenges. Test your skills with MLB Pickle, the ultimate mystery player challenge, and Immaculate Grid, where stats and strategy collide, or chase the $5.6 million jackpot and beat the streak, presented by BetMGM. And for an all-new spin on fantasy sports, there's Spinball. The game's official home for games is on the MLB app. MLB trademarks used with permission. No purchase necessary. Restrictions apply. For official rules, go to MLB.com/play/official rules.
I'm Jordan Robinson, host of the new podcast, The Women's Hoop Show. Each episode, I'll be joined by a rotating group of women's basketball experts to talk WNBA, college hoops, the new Unrivaled League, and the shifting landscape of the sport. The game is growing, and so are we. Listen to and follow The Women's Hoop Show and Odyssey Podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.